From the Edwin Cardinal O'Brien Pastoral Center in Washington, D.C., home base for the Archdiocese for the Military Services USA, this is Catholic Military Life, a podcast of the Archdiocese. I'm your moderator, Taylor Henry. And for this edition, a big treat, we have as our guest retired astronaut and four-star U.S. Air Force General Kevin P. Chilton, joining us by phone from Niceville, Florida. General Chilton, welcome to our podcast.
It's great to be with you this morning.
And our topic is going to be your upcoming talk at the National Eucharistic Congress coming up in July in Indianapolis, plus a remarkable career. And if you'll bear with me just a moment, General Chilton, I'll share with our listener your background. General Kevin Chilton, an astronaut who took the Eucharist to space, retired from the Air Force in 2011 as commander of the U.S. Strategic Command, a role in which he was responsible for the plans and operations of all U.S. forces conducting strategic nuclear deterrence and the Department of Defense's space and cyberspace operations. During his 34-year career in the Air Force and NASA, General Kevin Chilton served as a fighter pilot, test pilot, astronaut aboard three shuttle missions, Deputy Director for Political Military Affairs for Asia, Pacific, and the Middle East, Deputy Director for Air Force Programs, and Assistant Vice Chief of Staff for the Air Force. General Kevin Chilton is a graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy and Columbia University and currently works as president of Chilton & Associates, LLC. General Chilton, thank you so much for taking time. I understand you and your wife are enjoying your retirement, crossing the country, and stopping in Niceville long enough to talk to us.
Yes, we've had a great vacation so far.
Glad to hear that. Well, let's start. There's so much to talk about in your incredible career, but let's start with the National Eucharistic Congress coming up in July in Indianapolis. You are a breakout speaker, and I'm sure by now you've given some thought about what you're going to be talking about. Can you share some of those thoughts with us?
Yes, I'm happy to. First of all, I'm incredibly blessed and flattered to be invited to participate. It would be just an honor enough to be able to go and attend the Congress, but to be invited to speak is just a great honor. I'm humbled by that. I did want to speak a little bit about my experiences taking the Eucharist to orbit on the space shuttle on all three flights. And I think, you know, if there's an example of practicing your faith in your work environment, that's probably the closest I've ever come or the best I've ever done in that regard. So it'll be nice to talk a bit about that. But also maybe share some thoughts on being a Catholic and practicing my faith while on active duty, all within the very justifiable and constraints, which I totally support, with regard to not proselytizing while in uniform, which is, you know, a rule in our military, which I think is a great rule, but at the same time, living your faith fully and not letting not letting that inhibit the way you practice your faith.
I see. So tell me about that. What led you to take the Eucharist into space? Was that just something you decided to do as a result of your practice of the Catholic faith, or how did that come about?
Well, it actually came about through a conversation I had with another Catholic astronaut, a wonderful man, G. David Lowe, who sadly left this life too early from cancer. But he and I were speaking before my first flight, and he had flown once already, and he told me he had taken the Eucharist into space. And I just thought that was fantastic, and what a great idea. So it was really G. David Lowe who inspired me to do the same thing.
So you went into space with the Eucharist on three different occasions. What years were those, General Chilton?
Yeah, 1992 was the first time, and then 94, and then 1996 was my last flight.
And so tell me about those experiences aboard the space shuttle. What is it like flying around the globe and seeing the Earth from far off?
Well, it's probably hard to describe in words other than it's awe-inspiring. Certainly, I think my faith also came into play there as you look down on the Earth. And, you know, we're not that far away in the space shuttle. It's not like the pictures from Apollo where you see the entire Earth out the window in one scene. You're quite a bit lower and closer, which means you can see things with a little more detail as well. But you know, just the beauty of the creation just strikes you so vividly. And it makes you, for me, it made me feel very small. It was humbling. And most of all, just so grateful to God for having given us this wonderful gift of planet Earth to live on. Really is a beautiful sight to see.
Well, for most of us, sir, that would be still far off. most of us will never get a chance to fly aboard the shuttle, and quite frankly, I wouldn't even want to try. So I've heard the same thing from other astronauts before, too, that looking at the Earth from above gives you a sense of wonder and a connection to the divine in a way that you cannot experience here down on the Earth. So how did it come about? You graduated from the U.S. Air Force Academy, back in the 70s, 76, I think it was, right?
That's right. Yeah, 1976.
And obviously you served, and by the way, thank you for your service, your distinguished service. Obviously you had a deep connection to your Catholic faith all along. How important do you think spiritual discipline is to effective military service?
Well, I think there's benefit to it, to effective military service. I'm sure there's folks who have no spirituality, well, from a sense that they may be atheist or agnostic. I guess you could call that a type of spirituality. But I think for me personally, I can only speak for me, that my connection to my faith helped me make good decisions as a military person, and it also gave me comfort and also console when I had to do difficult things or just the normal things that we all experience going through life, the normal temptations or circumstances we have to deal with. I think it's foundational to good judgment and correct thinking, and I think that's very helpful as a member of the United States military to have that support in your hip pocket, if you will.
I'm sure you knew some Catholic military chaplains, Catholic Air Force chaplains during your service. Tell me about the influence chaplains can exert and how they can improve morale in a unit, in a military unit.
Oh, I think they're absolutely essential. Chaplains of all faiths are essential to the spiritual and mental health and well-being of our military members. And I've had, of course, experiences since I was a cadet. One of my favorite all-time chaplains, there were two of them when I was a cadet. Father Bob Shannon was the head Catholic chaplain, head chaplain at the Air Force Academy. He was a colonel at the time when I was a cadet, and I believe at the time a young Captain Bill Denninger, who later went on to become the chief of chaplains of the Air Force and then a bishop of the Catholic Church in Nebraska. Both were great help to me as a cadet, and then Father Bill and I would run into each other now and then throughout our careers as he moved up the ladder to eventually become a major general in the Air Force. Their example and the fact that I could go to them and speak with them, they were available to provide counsel and support, was wonderful. And you'll see chaplains, and certainly in command positions that I had, I would always encourage our chaplains to get out on the flight line, get out of the chapel. You got to do that work, but get out in the field and interact with our young troops and make themselves known and available to the men and women in the Air Force, and so that they can, people know that they're there to support them and help them. And I, every military chaplain I ever worked with, that they love doing that. They love being out and about and getting to know the folks. And so, so much of a part of it is making sure that the men and women in uniform understand that chaplains are in uniform as well, and they're part of the team, and they're there to help, and they can help in a very special way, a non-attribution way, that is important, I think.
That calls to mind some of our hero chaplains. One name that comes to mind is Father Vincent Capodanno, who was known as the Grunt Padre for his respect and interaction, easy interactions and friendships with the men in the trenches who died in action in Vietnam. There are others too, Father Emil Capon, others who were intimately involved in the day-to-day operations of the military personnel that they served. I'm talking to General Kevin P. Chilton, retired four-star general of the United States Air Force, an astronaut who's been on three shuttle missions and carried the Eucharist into space. General Chilton will be speaking at a breakout session of the upcoming National Eucharistic Congress in Indianapolis in July. General Chilton, I want to ask you, we talked a little bit about looking at the Earth from the space shuttle, but I'd like to reach farther back into your career and the time when you were a test pilot and flying these fighter planes. Now, for the layman, someone who wouldn't even think about trying to fly a jet, a fighter jet, or jump out of a plane, or any some of the things that you and your colleagues in the military so heroically do. Tell me what that's like when you're flying a fighter plane and you're traveling at however many miles per hour, knots, what it is you use to measure it. What is that like when you're going full speed? I mean, surely you have some come to Jesus moments in those experiences.
Well, it's thrilling. I mean, and I just absolutely loved every minute of it. I was so blessed to have the career I had in aviation and flying fighters was just, I mean, people ask me if you could live your career over again, what would you do? And they expect me to say, fly in space. And I usually say, no, I'd like to be a young lieutenant flying fighters overseas. The camaraderie in the organization, the mission focus, the pure joy of flying was just fantastic. Now, that doesn't mean there weren't moments where you had the afterwards, it usually happened after the flight, where you had the feeling of cold, ice-cold blood running through your body because you'd realize you dodged a bullet, figuratively speaking, and maybe made a mistake and recovered from it and yet to live to fly another day. But that didn't happen all that often. Mostly it was just the thrill of flying and the competition and always seeking to improve your skills that I loved.
Well, so how high typically would you fly in one of these fighter jets and how fast?
Well, it depended. You know, I started out in flying the RF-4, which was a reconnaissance version of the F-4 Phantom II. And in that airplane, we were qualified to fly down 100 feet off the ground at 600 knots. So that was thrilling in itself, just to be flying that low and that fast. Flying the F-15, we did aerial combat training at all altitudes, from low altitude to high. But, you know, rarely would you get above 30,000 feet in aerial combat. Later in my career, I had the opportunity to command the 9th Reconnaissance Wing, where the men and women in that organization fly the U-2 aircraft above 70,000 feet. And I had a chance to do a few flights in the U-2 up at that altitude, and not many airplanes fly higher than that.
Did you say U-2, as in spy plane?
Yes,
okay.
We prefer to call it a reconnaissance plane.
Understood, sir. I'm surprised that the U-2 was still in service. This would have been in the 80s or 90s that you were doing this, right?
Yeah, the late 90s, early 2000s.
I see.
But the airplane was not, had been improved over the years. The one that was developed in the 1950s and famously hit the headlines in the 1960s was replaced with an upgraded version in the early 80s, and that's what we flew. And it was an incredibly capable and remains an incredibly unique and capable aircraft today.
I see. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about your time as commander of the U.S. Strategic Command, a role in which you were responsible for the plans and operations of all U.S. forces conducting strategic nuclear deterrence in the Department of Space and cyberspace operations. Wow, that sounds like a really big job, and it's somewhat especially relevant to today with what's going on in Europe and the Middle East and all the Russia's nuclear saber rattling. What was that like? Did you ever get any sleep?
I got plenty of sleep because I had such a great team at U.S. Strategic Command who paid attention to all those particular areas. You know, a commander's job is not to sit around and make every decision. The commander's job is to enable the people under his or her command to do their jobs and support them, give them guidance when they need it or seek it, broad general guidance. But you really, as a commander, want to enable, find the tools, everything they need to be successful, the folks working for you. And if you do that, they'll shock you with their ingenuity and do great things. And I was so blessed at STRATCOM, excuse me, to have experts in each of those areas to lead our efforts to do what our primary mission at STRATCOM was to deter attacks on the United States, whether they be nuclear or in space or in cyber. And at that time period, it was the beginning of the offensive capability. We started to see our adversaries. China did an anti-satellite test the year before I took command. And so we were faced with finally space becoming a warfighting domain. And at the same time, both China and Russia and Iran and North Korea were conducting cyber attacks against the United States, against commercial companies, and as well as doing espionage work against the United States. And so it was really a transition period. Now that's become pretty routine, not that it's acceptable, but in all those areas we're seeing more aggressive activity by Russia and China in space, and we're seeing certainly continued aggression in cyberspace. And then we've seen more recently a little nuclear saber rattling coming out of Russia in their war in the Ukraine. So all three of those areas are still really important, and we're blessed to have a great team at STRATCOM today that continues on working to deter conflict in those areas.
When you see what's going on now, do you worry?
Well, I think we get paid to worry when we're in the military. we our job is to pay attention to all possible scenarios. And, as I say, on the risk matrix, where you have the 5x5 likelihood versus consequence, we're not allowed to disregard any square on that matrix, no matter how unlikely the threat may be. We have to be thinking about all the time, what if it happens? First of all, how do we prevent it from happening? But if it does happen, do we have the right forces in place and the right authorities to deal with those types of situations?
Of course, things are a little bit more tense now than they were even 3 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of where we are today. Just look around the world; it's what you'd say, it's kind of a chocolate mess from the Middle East to the Western Pacific to Europe. We even see threats on the threats to freedom-loving people living on the African continent from some terrorist organizations who kidnap innocents, things like that. So no, there's a lot of threats, a lot of risks that our military men and women today have to be prepared to deal with. And so it's certainly, I think, a higher, the world's at, in general, it's a more riskier environment than it was 3 years ago or even 11 years ago when I retired.
I'm talking to retired U.S. Air Force four-star general and astronaut General Kevin P. Chilton, joining us by telephone from Niceville, Florida, where he and his wife, Kathy, are enjoying their retirement and on vacation. And once again, General Chilton, thank you for taking time out of your vacation to talk to us here for a few minutes. You'll be speaking at the National Eucharistic Congress at a breakout session coming up in Indianapolis, July 17th through the 21st. You will stand as a role model based on your accomplishments and remarkable career for the thousands, tens of thousands who'll be gathered for this Congress. Obviously, you had a strong upbringing and a commitment to discipline and service that led you to achieve all you've achieved. Tell me a little bit more about that. What were you a cradle Catholic? Did your folks encourage the practice faith? How did you come to be the role model, the example that you are?
Well, first of all, I don't think of myself as a role model. I think of myself as a regular person who struggles with sin and temptation like every other person on this planet does, every other Catholic certainly. So I'm uncomfortable actually being called a role model in that regard. But I think one, certainly I am a cradle Catholic, and certainly when I think about the opportunities and the preparation, a lot of it has to do with preparation to be able to take advantage of opportunities when they come along, begins with the foundations my parents gave me. My mother and father, my mother was a convert, my father was a cradle Catholic, and, you know, they raised us in the Catholic faith, but they also raised us, and my father always used to say, he says, as a dad, I have two jobs. One is to help you get into heaven, and the other one is to make sure you grow up to be a good citizen, productive citizen for the United States of America. And when I reflect back on the things that they had us involved in, whether it be athletics, their emphasis on academics and hard work, they did a great job in laying that foundational background for me to go forward in life. But, you know, I honestly didn't join the Air Force, go off to the Air Force Academy out of a sense of service or for God and country. I did it for very selfish reasons. I grew up near LA International Airport, and my mother had been a stewardess in the 1940s, so she had friends that were retired from that, who were married to airline pilots and who were very close family friends. And I said, that's what I want to be when I grow up, as an airline pilot. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out how to... That was my goal. I think it's important to have goals. I don't care, you know, and goals can change. It's important to be flexible in that regard. But I had a serious goal of wanting to become a pilot, and I couldn't figure out how to get flying lessons. And then I heard about this place in Colorado. If you went to school there, they not only paid you to go to school, they taught you how to fly. It was called the Air Force Academy. And so I joined the United States Air Force for the purpose, the goal of serving my time. In those years, it was 5 years after graduation from flight school. And then I was going to get out and become an airline pilot. So if you judge me based on did I meet my goals that I'd set for myself at the age of 13, the answer is no, I failed miserably because I never did become an airline pilot. But along the way, a funny thing happened. Is on the way to becoming an airline pilot, I fell in love with the United States Air Force and decided to stay in. And so, you know, things changed along the way, but I didn't start out saying, okay, I want to go off and serve my country. I said, I want to go off and get a job as an airline pilot.
I see. That's very interesting. We're all on a journey, and life is a pilgrimage. And, we're on a pilgrimage for the Lord, for Jesus. And we don't always know at the beginning of the journey exactly where it is we're going to end up. But I think if we practice our faith and listen to his call, we'll find our way. And obviously you did.
I agree with that. And, you know, one of the, I think when we say the Our Father, you know, we ask for thy will be done. And that's something I've always, you know, I've known friends that say, well, you know, what are you going to do next? They say, well, I'm going to go where the Lord takes me. And I'm going, man, I wish I had that voice in my head, because I just don't seem to ever hear it as much as I pray for it. But frankly, when I look back on my career, it's clear that there's so many things happened that I had no control over, as far as doors being presented to me that I could either push on and open or decide not to. As I reflect back, I think, you know, certainly the Lord was taking me in directions that I didn't even know he was doing. And for his purposes, I believe. So, it's a curious thing when we say, you know, thy will be done, and we sit there and we listen for that voice, that booming voice that says, no, go be a pilot, go stay in the Air Force, don't get out, or go apply to NASA or whatever. I've never heard those, but on reflection, I believe his hand has been very strong in my life.
You know, one thing we hear over and over again, both from our chaplains and priests and the Bible itself, is that the Lord whispers. He doesn't always make a big impact when he's speaking, but I think all of us, believers anyway, can look back on our lives and see places where, how did I get there? And that was obviously the Lord at work. Well, in the last couple of minutes we've got General Kevin P. Chilton, what are the values, what are the things that young people, a young person listening to this podcast should pursue to achieve the, you know, even a fraction of the success you have? How does one become a successful person in their work life, and more importantly, a successful practicing Catholic?
Keep showing up, I think, is the important thing. There's lots of temptations to either not give work your best effort or not give your faith practice a best effort. We all go through these periods in our life where we're either distracted or depressed or led away by other things. But always, for me, it was always to come back and not give up, not give up on doing your very best in your career, and not give up on your faith. And just realize that if you do slide away for a while, that is not uncommon. And it's important to always return and come back. And for me, it's been the foundational rock for my life, my faith, and everything that I've done. And then, you know, with regard to my military career, people always ask, well, what's your leadership philosophy? And a friend of mine once said, we were both asked to speak on leadership at a college, and he and I had known each other since the Air Force Academy. He'd gone off into industry, and of course I had stayed in the military, and he did very well in industry. And he said, can you recommend any books on leadership that we should recommend to the students? And he immediately said, the Bible. And that didn't jump to my mind immediately. And Jim said, and my friend said, well, just think about what Jesus Christ, one man, did and how he led and changed the world. And said, so study how Jesus Christ lived his life and how he led people. And he's so right. And the foundational thing, I think, that I take away and tried to lead by always is the golden rule. You know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that doesn't mean you're always kind. Sometimes we all need a little kick in the rear to straighten up. But it means to always think about that when you treat people, how you treat other people. And certainly the Lord did that. He led with kindness, and he led with firmness when it was required.
I've been talking to retired U.S. Air Force four-star general and astronaut General Kevin P. Chilton, the astronaut who took the Eucharist to space three times aboard the space shuttle. General Chilton, thank you so much for talking to us, and we certainly look forward to your talk at the one of the breakout sessions at the upcoming National Eucharistic Congress in Indianapolis, July 17th through the 21st. Thank you for joining us, sir.
My pleasure, and I'm looking forward to attending the conference. It will be a wonderful celebration of the Eucharist.